the Occupy Camp just across from 4310 Southwest McAdams Street in Portland, next to the I-5 freeway, where the ICE compound is being confronted by a dedicated group of people who are camping out on land that has been, I wouldn't say granted, but on an easement that has been granted, let's put it that way, by TriMet, the local transportation authority. And I'm joined by Moises. Good morning, Moises.
Good morning, Teresa.
And I'll be talking to Moises in just a moment about his experiences here. And I am at the KBOO booth, and KBOO, just as in the case of so many protests, as in the case of Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Portland, as in the case of reporting from Seattle in 99, we are here, and we are ready to be here with the story and to represent your interests rather than corporate interests. Yeah. I have some news headlines. The first from The Guardian, it's about Yolani Padilla. She's a 24-year-old mother, and she spirited her young son out of Honduras, they write, only to lose him at the U.S.-Mexico border to American immigration officials. Now she is the lead plaintiff in a lawsuit against the U.S. federal government, hopes to stand in for hundreds of other asylum-seeking parents separated from their children at the border. She says, through an interpreter, it is time to return our kids. Released from federal detention on Friday, Padilla and her attorneys are pushing U.S. immigration officials to move forward in reuniting her family and those of other parents caught up in the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy, which saw thousands of immigrant children taken from their parents at the border. Speaking in Seattle, Padilla said that she hadn't seen her son, Helsin, since the day before her arrest in May. Helsin spends weekdays at a youth center and nights and weekends with a foster family. Padilla knows nothing of. He doesn't understand why he can't be with his mother. Their phone calls, more frequent now that Padilla has been released, tend to end in tears. Padilla said through an interpreter, what they are doing is terrible. I just hope the other mothers who are detained will be liberated soon. For Padilla, holdup is largely bureaucratic and, as her attorneys describe it, needlessly cruel. Parents like Padilla are being forced through a system of background checks and identity verifications designed to protect children who arrive in the United States without parents, her attorney said following a press conference. Her attorney is named Lita Sanchez. Immigration officials have a photo taken of Padilla and Helsin hours after they were detained. And there's much more on that article at theguardian.co.uk, which will transfer to guardian.com, I think, if you pull it up in the U.S. And from Democracy Now! This morning, we heard that ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has shackled women in a 100-degree-plus van until they passed out, and that Trump is now planning to charge parents $800 for a DNA test before finding their children, as if they had $800. Turning to an article from Vox.com, in a joint filing Tuesday, the Trump administration and the ACLU attested that at least 20 children who are supposed to be reunited with their families under the court order will not be reunited in time due to logistical obstacles. And I just want to say for myself that the idea that they have insurmountable logistical obstacles is absurd, and of course they are entirely of their own making, and it has come out from other sources that ICE has deliberately deleted information, even their own tracking numbers of children, and it's becoming more and more obvious that the intent from the start was to permanently separate these families and to cause that terror on the backs of these little kids and their parents. Now, I want to return to that topic, but I have some more news items, other things happening in the world. From South China Morning Press, North Korean officials did not turn up to Thursday's scheduled meeting with the U.S. military about repatriating the remains of the war dead. Speaking for myself, that, of course, is a big deal and one of the biggest deals. That, turning over the Pueblo, ending the war, and denuclearization were supposedly on the table, and now it appears that that is falling through. The two sides, returning to the SCMP article, had been expected to discuss at the Korean Peninsula's demilitarized zone the return of U.S. troop remains from the 1950 to 53 war, an arrangement that the State Department had announced after Secretary Mike Pompeo's visit to Pyongyang last Friday and Saturday. State Department officials said that the meeting would likely take place on July 12th, though they added that the date could shift. On Thursday, however, Department of Defense and United Nations Command officials were left waiting in the DMZ. They expected North Korean officials but they never arrived, according to the official who requested anonymity, as he was not permitted to talk publicly about the event. "We're ready," the official said. "It just didn't happen. They didn't show." It was not immediately clear why North Korean officials had not attended the meeting or whether they had ever confirmed their intention to. The State Department did not respond to a request for comment. Ahead of the summit in Singapore, North Korean officials sometimes did not turn up to meetings. The repatriation of remains of U.S. soldiers from North Korea has been a major issue between Washington and Pyongyang since the end of the Korean War, when thousands of Americans' bodies were left in Korea either missing in action or prisoners of war. Hundreds of remains have been repatriated since 1990, but the process has been fraught with mistrust. The transfer of remains from North Korea to the United States has not taken place since 2005. And speaking for myself, I was saying that due to the presence of John Bolton at the negotiations, it's doubtful that there was ever a serious intent from the side of the United States to end the war. And I believe that we will now see more and more incidents which will lead to an increase in tensions, if not outright war. In Tel Aviv, Radio Havana, Cuba, reports the Israeli Navy was dispatched Tuesday to stop a boat which departed the Gaza Strip and which was carrying injured Palestinian civilians. The boat intended to take the injured civilians from border protests to Cyprus for medical treatment. The Navy stopped the boat, surrounding it and towing it to an Israeli naval base at Ashdod. Organizers of the flotilla, which took off earlier on Tuesday, said contact with one boat was lost after 10 nautical miles. Israel's blockade restricts Gazan vessels in what has been called the world's largest open-air prison up to 6 nautical miles off the coastal territory. Also from Radio Havana, Cuba, Workers' Party Senator Lindbergh Farias said that Brazilian justice is harassing the presidential candidacy of Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who is only 72 hours away from serving 100 days at political prison in the city of Curitiba. Farias made the statement on social media after the federal judge of Paraná, Carolina Lebos, forbade the former president to film videos or to grant interviews for his campaign, thereby, speaking for myself, revealing the political intent of imprisoning the man, who is the expected winner of any fair contest, and indeed has been the equivalent of AMLO in Brazil. Returning to the article, Lebos justified her ruling on Wednesday, saying that there is no constitutional or legal provision to support the right of an inmate to grant interviews. However, the law in criminal court, law in criminal enforcement, indicates that the inmate's contact with the outside world is through written correspondence, reading, and other means of information. Meanwhile, it's been disclosed that the Brazilian Superior Justice Tribunal has received some 145 habeas corpus petitions on behalf of the former president, following last week's dramatic back and forth between judges over his release from jail. And speaking of habeas corpus, I am broadcasting as notoriously slow or absent in its duties of habeas corpus, and I am joined by Moises, who is present in the camp. And Moises, have you been staying at the camp?
I have.
What's it been like?
Overall or currently?
Any way you want to put it.
So overall, it's been quite a process of getting things more calm to the point where we're right now not having so many alarms going off at night. First couple of weeks, there were a lot of tense vibes and a lot of fear that we might get raided. But ever since the attempted raid of DHS and their failure to take down our wall, I think we're feeling a lot safer too.
That was remarkable. And it brings up one of the... One of the differences I noticed between the, for example, Occupy camp, I think that people might want to compare the two in their minds just automatically because Occupy was the latest large movement of such, and you know it involved tents and camping and that sort of thing. And this, of course, is called Occupy ISPDX. But this, there are differences here. This area, which has been granted for use effectively by TriMet to the protesters, is barricaded. I suppose on both ends, I'm looking to the south, and yes, it is indeed barricaded. And these are substantial barricades. I saw on video where four federal cops apparently lost their temper. I don't know whether it was planned or not, and tried to push down a barricade the other day, and were unable to do so. It's a substantial barricade, and I imagine people were pushing back on the other side. So shades of the French Revolution there. These are real barricades, and they have watchtowers, and people are trying to maintain the peace. And when I come down here, that is what I primarily experience. This is a peaceful place. It's quiet. I see kids you know, doing their thing. I see gardens. I see facilities for looking after people. And, of course, the KABU booth is here as well. And so would you say that it is that this is mostly a peaceful place?
It is. It is a community.
And the disruptions have come from the federal police.
They have. It has. They are unwilling to see us for people right now. They see us as protesters primarily, which we are, but we are also people trying to make something new here.
There are other differences, which I mentioned the last time I was here. Notably that at Occupy, for example, the intent was to bring attention to the disparity and the inequitable distribution of wealth, the deflation of wages and then the inflation of rents, and the disastrous accumulation of wealth amongst the billionaire class. And there were also elements of looking to the future and saying what could be or what might be experienced. And here, there is some of that, but there is also, I feel, a deep determination, a grief, and an anger. Would you say so?
Yes. Determination, for sure. Everybody here is determined to see that building shut down. The building is one thing, but we want the entity of ICE to be abolished, dismantled, however you want to put it, legally, to the point where they're not longer operational and families can be reunited.
I think there's I see a frustration expressed sometimes. I was here yesterday and a young man had a bullhorn and he was just frankly harassing the federal police in front, just going on and on. His anger was evident. But what I mostly see here is, in terms of frustration, is quite quiet efforts, an attempt to bring it terroristic, and it is still going on.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, 3 weeks so far, we're coming up on 4 real quick, and on Sunday, the simple fact that we were already at the forum porch of DHS, we had that space taken, and then they took it back, didn't sit right with many people, understandably, because the facility was back in operational, and families were going in to do the paperwork, their families probably being detained. I haven't been here all the time, but I've seen plenty of people go in and go out, and but I have. There was an incident yesterday where people tried to blockade the GEO bus from exiting.
Can you describe the GEO bus?
It is white, standard, has a GEO bus logo on the side.
Is that one of those that has the windows shielded with steel plates?
I don't remember seeing steel plates.
I've seen many that would match that description, so this is a slightly different one. But go ahead.
Probably. But there was also the talk that they also left with an ambulance beforehand, which we couldn't block. Like, a GEO bus is one thing, an ambulance is a different thing. And we really were trying to figure out how to best play this. Because difficult. Very difficult right now to be treading on legal lines of DHS is the one abusing their power, and we're here just peacefully protesting as best as we can.
So you wouldn't want to block an ambulance, since that is, you know, obviously something that needs to happen, whereas blocking the transport of prisoners is something that could make a statement. And I suppose, in the first place, that there are prisoners being transported, that this is a very large prison. For many years, it was simply unacknowledged, except that, you know, I'm proud to say, on KBOO. And as I was also saying, it's a place where habeas corpus is essentially a joke. We don't know how many people are there and what their names are.
Yeah, I want to point out the fact that the DHS building, the ICE facility out here, has a parking lot with about four floors. That's a lot of cars that can fit in there.
A parking layer with four floors. So that means that it goes way down.
Way down. I mean, it's on the hillside, and frankly, this place is more like a fortress, honestly, for them. They have built it to the point where it's a fortress, and they're scared of us, which is honestly pathetic.
Yes. I would like to ask you more about that, because I've seen that. I've seen an armed soldier on the roof, which is what you do with a fortress. It's a gigantic place. I mean, this this Occupy camp next to it is all along the length of it, which makes it about 100 yards at least, I would say,
all
from
tents.
End to end. And yes, and do you know how many people are here?
Never. There's always probably about 50 people at least, if not more, and coming and going. People that are going out to get some rest, do some errands. People that are coming just by driving their bikes or running their daily commute kind of thing.
It is the most substantial permanent protest presence that I have seen since Occupy, pardon me, years ago. And I'm impressed by that. I understand that today there is, I think it's today, there is, either today or tomorrow, there is a group led by Buddhists coming out here to encircle, and have you heard about that?
Yes, a prayer circle every once a week, I believe, and they've been doing it for a lot longer than we've been here occupying too, so gotta figure all those things add up eventually.
I'm very impressed personally by the effort undertaken here. I can hear a piano, which is covered by a frame and a tarp. There's music here. There's medicine here. An herbalist tent, is that correct?
And we have a medicinal herbal garden growing, too.
There is a kitchen. Supplies are coming in. I understand more supplies are needed. Sanitary facilities have been taken care of. So you walk into this place, and if you don't look at the ICE compound, or if they're not blocking the street as they were yesterday with their vehicles flashing, then it really comes off as a very peaceful place. You know, it's peaceful except when it's being confronted by federal police. Have you heard anything about the people who were arrested yesterday?
Aside from being released,
they were released.
All of them have been released up to now, and if I'm not mistaken, they are facing obstruction and failure to comply charges, which...
The videos of their arrests on Facebook, Twitter, and other media show that they were very violent arrests. There's a great deal of anger being expressed
by
the federal police.
They were literally pushed onto the streets by the federal police. They were standing on the actual pavement for cars, which is public right away, and police just came up from behind them, pushed them as far as they could, I'm betting, to try and get them on federal property so they can charge them with trespassing federal property.
Uh-huh.
And frankly, they didn't get them there. They stayed on the street for the most part.
They
even had people de-arrest themselves. And
yes, that was very dramatic. I saw a video of someone just getting up and running off. His hands were still bound behind him, and he took off like a shot. I mean, that would have been a creditable Olympic run, I think. And they didn't even try to chase after him with all their equipment loaded onto them. I imagine that would have been rather difficult. Well, thank you very much for sharing that. I'm going to go into some more articles that I've brought with me as part of the conceit of my show is the news you're not supposed to know, so I'll go into more of that. But I invite you to stay and to comment as you will. I'm on air for another 40-odd minutes.
All right.
Once again, this is Press Watch. You're listening to KBOO Portland, and I'm here at the KBOO booth, which Janka Soderberg has set up. Well, I say Janka, also so many other people. Sandra is here. Sandra is engineering this. We are running off a deep cycle battery, which we had part of the reason we have that battery is to prepare for post-earthquake broadcasting duties, which we take very seriously and have meetings on. And we also need funding for that. I just want to say that out loud and ask you to think about it. We need, and I think that this if you look at what FEMA has done, if you look at what is going to happen to this town, and if you look at the very very hierarchical structure and the top-down FEMA connection with the local preparations, I think I can predict that the earthquake response is going to be very militarized and very top-down, and except for KBOO. And that is why we need funds just for basic things like this deep cycle battery that is allowing me to broadcast to you right now. We will be setting up a separate antenna here on the east side. Well, actually, I'm on the west side right now, but we'll be setting up our own antenna. We'll be making sure that we are on the air for you after the quake. So please consider that when you're considering contributing to KBOO, KBOO.FM. And we are physically located at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, Oregon. But that's not where I'm at right now. I'm at the Occupy ICE PDX camp. Across from me are 8-foot, very neat, artistically laid out letters saying, "What would Mom say?" And this is addressed and in response to the various PSYOPs efforts from the federal police who have taken over the ICE facility, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Facility. Now, some more of the news you're not supposed to know. From WSWS.org, one of the websites that has been powerfully downvoted by the Google and Facebook and other search engines in order to keep you from accessing dissenting journalistic coverage. WSWS.org writes, "The class war over wages continues." In an article titled, "Workers Welcome Wage Gains But Companies Feel Squeeze," the voice of corporate America, the Wall Street Journal, warns that workers' demands for increased wages are threatening to bring the stock market bonanza to an end. The article acknowledges that the striving of workers to reverse years of stagnating and declining wages is in conflict with the profit drive of corporate America. It thereby implicitly admits that the working class and the capitalist class are engaged in a zero-sum class war. Quoting the article, "Rising wages are beginning to eat into the profits of some U.S. companies. Businesses from dollar stores to hotel operators to fast food chains have warned in recent months that higher labor costs have been a drag on their profits, a potential headwind for the 9-year stock market rally as it struggles for momentum ahead of the second quarter earnings season." End quote. Workers know, WSWS.org writes, that the average wage growth of 2.5% over the last 16 months is not enough to keep up with the rising cost of living. But as far as the Wall Street Journal is concerned, this slight increase is a threat. The article cites a Goldman Sachs report noting that a 1% increase in labor costs decreases corporate earnings by 0.8%. In other words, the boom in corporate profits has depended on the suppression of wages and the intensified exploitation of the working class. There's much more to that article. I urge you to pull it up at WSWS.org, Trotskyist journalists, and they do a fine job. And they're very open, as I've often said, about being Trotskyists. And I would like to ask for a moment of silence for the billionaires who have lost a few pennies due to being forced to give some wages, being a good anarcho-socialist myself, just for, you know, for the pain that they feel in their hearts, a moment of silence. Okay, that's enough. Ecuador's government is negotiating Julian Assange's fate with the UK, and that is also from WSWS.org, one of the few sites that is covering this issue at all. Bill Van Auken, who's been into KBOO, writes, "Within the last week, Ecuador's President Lenin Moreno and Foreign Minister Jose Valencia have issued public statements indicating that they are in negotiations with the UK government of Prime Minister Theresa May regarding the fate of WikiLeaks editor Julian Assange, who has spent the last 6 years in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he sought asylum in June 2012. The Moreno government cut off Assange's access to the internet in March and denied him both phone calls and visitors outside of his attorneys, leaving him effectively under incommunicado detention with less rights than a convict. Assange is confronting a coordinated plot by London and Washington to have him arrested and extradited to the U.S. to face charges of treason and espionage, punishable by long imprisonment or even death for WikiLeaks exposure of U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan, State Department plots, and CIA electronic surveillance and cyber warfare. And speaking for myself, this, of course, has to do with Chelsea Manning, who revealed the vicious machine gunning of journalists from the air. And revealed that video so that the world knew exactly how the U.S. conducted its war in Iraq. Returning to WSWS.org, last Thursday, Moreno told a press conference held for the foreign media in Quito, Ecuador, that his government is in talks with the May government in London to resolve the issue of Assange. He criticized the decision to grant Assange Ecuadorian nationality, which is made by Ecuador's former foreign minister, Maria Fernanda Espinosa, who has since been replaced by Valencia, a U.S.-educated diplomat with strong ties to Washington. And since Moises is still here, I wonder, Moises, do you have comments on any of those news items?
That's a lot of news items.
That's a lot of news items. That's a lot of news items. Comes right at you.
Yep. Honestly, there's a lot of things going on in the world, and Julian Assange and Chelsea Manning, those guys are heroes. Edward Snowden too. We wouldn't be fighting right now if it weren't for them. They gave us so many tools, as far as I'm concerned, and will keep doing what they where they left off.
Thank you. Now, I want to talk about the situation in which it was reported yesterday on Democracy Now! And again today that children have been detained in a black site, and that phrase has the implication of terror and torture, and I use that term advisedly, that a black site has been located pretty much accidentally, as they often are, in Arizona. We know much more about this due to the journalism of revealnews.org. And there was an article by Ara Bogado, Ziva Brandsetter, and Vanessa Swales. I don't know if Ara Bogado is a, certainly sounds like a pseudonym, but I'll just leave it at that. I'll read from their article, which was the basis of the Democracy Now! Information. A major U.S. defense contractor quietly detained dozens of immigrant children inside a vacant Phoenix office building with dark windows, no kitchen, and only a few toilets during 3 weeks of the Trump administration's family separation effort. Videos shot by an alarmed neighbor show children dressed in sweatsuits being led, one so young she was carried, into the 3,200-square-foot building in early June. The building was not licensed by Arizona, is not licensed by Arizona to hold children, and the contractor, MVM Incorporated, has claimed publicly that it does not operate shelters or any type of housing for children. Defending the administration's policy to separate families at the border in a May interview with NPR, White House Chief of Staff White House Chief of Staff John Kelly promised the children will be taken care of, put into foster care, or whatever, end quote. Whether or not these children were taken from their parents, that whatever for them was the vacant building tucked away in a midtown Phoenix neighborhood. They write, it is not listed among shelters operating through the Federal Office of Refugee Resettlement or on the state child care licensing website. There are new cameras on the building, extra locks on the door, and a paper shredder bin. Directly outside the building's side door. The neighbor, Liana Dunlap's videos, show workers pulling up in white vans and leading dazed children into the building. When she asked questions, she said the workers responded with silence or terse answers. Now, the fact that the children were dazed could be due to their circumstances, probably would be. But there's more to it than that, and it gets creepier. And part of this is also due to Reveal's reporting on exactly how these children are treated. But returning to the article I was just reading from, there have been times when I drive by and I just start crying because, you know, it's right behind my house. That's a quote from Dunlap. Her voice is wavering as she said, I don't know, and I think that's the worst part, not knowing what's actually going on in there and just hoping that they're okay, end quote. The building was leased in March by MVM, a Virginia-based defense contractor that has received contracts worth up to $248 million to transport immigrant children since 2014. Records show the company, which once provided guards for CIA facilities in Iraq, was founded by three former Secret Service agents. One of its vice presidents is a former CIA special agent and former acting director of the U.S. Marshals Service. Now, departing from that text, this, of course, may make your hair raise on your head when you think about what the CIA does to people in so-called black sites. For example, people being tortured to death in Iraq or even taken away to bizarre places, bizarre because they don't seem to be related, in Eastern Europe. And it's a fact that here in Portland, people who are being extradited in secret were flown in unmarked white planes to what used to be called the Evergreen airfield and flown out. So Portland has a connection with this. And right now today I'm broadcasting across from the ICE dungeon and detention facility at 4310 Southwest McAdam, where angry and determined people have been confronting the ongoing separation of children from their families and the vicious and secretive nature of deportation procedures in the United States by ICE. And they are here, and this is the KBU booth at the PDX, Occupy ICE PDX camp. And again, as I was saying before, this is a very organized, and it is a peaceful facility. When it is not peaceful, it is because it is being invaded or being confronted by federal police who just can't quite seem to reconcile themselves to the fact that they're going to be permanently confronted engaging in what is clear internationally is illegal and terroristic and racist policies coming from the Trump administration. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is called Press Watch. I'm here with engineer Sandra and with Moises, and Jinka is here also, and we are broadcasting live from the camp that is going on right now. The camp is regulated by its General Assembly meetings, and if I understand correctly, they are calling for more people to show up. In terms of tactics, that's a very good idea. The more people show up, the more diluted the counter response is from the ICE camps. And the more people show up, the more people know about it. I think that this is an historic moment, and as such, it is being grossly underreported by the corporate-owned media. And having said that, I would like to congratulate Willamette Week and Portland Mercury for at least getting here when something dramatic happened. Street Roots is also here. Street Roots has their own booth, just a few booths down, or I guess you can't really call it a booth. It's a, what is this? It's a tent covering with some added tarps and some rugs. I wonder where the rugs came from. It's what it needs to be. And I say this is a historic moment because it's clear that the right wing is nettled, is galled, is infuriated by the fact that they have been called on this evil activity. And it's interesting to me that, you know, for as an activist myself, for decades I've called for an end to the brutality and, well, there's no other way to put it, the evil of imperial wars, which have gone on and increasingly since I graduated from high school. I graduated just after the Vietnam War. There was a brief hiatus in which the U.S. was not engaged in any major combat actions, and then starting in 1989 with the attack on Panama, that all changed. And, well, I suppose you could include the 1983 attack on Grenada, a pointless action. The violence has gotten worse and worse to the point that there are now something like 700 permanent U.S. military facilities, 700 points of U.S. violence across the globe to dominate the globe and to ensure the hegemony of U.S. corporations. But all of that has not been effectively confronted by the U.S. people, even though I've been to rally after rally and I've met so many good people who have done everything they can to confront U.S. imperial policy. And here again, an historic act is taking place. Something like 50 people here constantly at the church. Ha! That was a Freudian slip. Something like 50 people here at the occupation facility, and hundreds and perhaps thousands of people actually participating over time, confronting a U.S. policy, confronting a U.S. facility. This is something that should be covered. If it were not for the fact that the corporate press is the corporate press, this is something that will be remembered for many decades. And it's a turning point in U.S. history because the anger of the Trump supporters is being doubled down on in a very cynical way by the Trump administration. This is a time in which people are rightly calling out people who support Trump and support Trumpism and support the Republicans and saying, how can you be a part of this terroristic policy separating children, effectively torturing families just for the sake of a policy goal, which is the attempt to dry up the ongoing immigration, the ongoing flow of refugees from Mexico and from Central and South America. And so I want to go into a little bit of detail in a few moments about why this is happening. It goes back hundreds of years. And I'll be quoting from Eduardo Galeano's book. We have a helicopter going overhead now. I'll be quoting from Eduardo Galeano's seminal book, Open Veins of Latin America, Venas Abiertas de Latino America. And that book is a must-read for anyone who wants to understand that the reason Latin America is poor is the reason that America and Europe is rich. These two things are hand in hand. They are inseparable because of the way the wealth is and was extracted, and the dynamic that is exposed in that book also applies to other so-called third world countries, countries that are insulted for being victims of imperial aggression. That would apply to Africa as well. Why is Africa so poor? Why is, you know, so much of Latin America so poor? Well, it's because the United States is so rich, and I'll get to that in a minute. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. This is KBOO broadcasting live from the ICE, from across from the ICE detention facility at the Occupy ICE PDX camp. Returning to the article that led to Democracy Now!'s report, with temperatures in Phoenix hitting 111 degrees in June, Dunlap said she hoped the air conditioning was working when the children were inside the Black Site facility. Brown asked a worker what kind of business the employees were conducting. The business of the transportation, she was told. Transporting what, she asked? Humans, the worker replied. There's more to that article, and you can find that on the Reveal News site, revealnews.org, revealnews.org. And, of course, there's the videotape available on Democracy Now!, which makes reference to it and uses their reporter for human rights, Ara Bogato. But this takes place, I want to set some of the context for the Black Site. I have to wonder what they are doing, because the CIA in the past has not only used black sites to torture soldiers, but has tortured children in black sites. This goes back to the 1950s. It was called MK Ultra and is revealed in a book by John Marks called The Search for the Manchurian Candidate, and since then in many articles which are still available online. But we have some hint that this sort of thing is going on right now because of another article by Reveal News, which starts off saying the psychiatrist who has been prescribing powerful psychotropic medications to immigrant children at a federally funded residential treatment center in Texas has practiced without board certification to treat children and adolescents for nearly a decade. According to records that they found on the Texas Medical Board's website, Dr. Javier Ruiz Nazario reported he had specialized certification for treating children and adolescents. However, according to the website, he has not yet updated the board on the status of his board certification as required by its rules. Ruiz Nazario's name appears on various court documents that allege troubling practices at the Shiloh Treatment Center south of Houston, including affidavits and class action settlement motions in which children claim they were tackled and injected and forced to take pills identified as vitamins that made them dizzy and drowsy. Many of the records specifically name Ruiz Nazario as the doctor who prescribed the medication. The treatment center is operated by one of at least a dozen government contractors with turbulent histories that house children detained by U.S. Customs and Border Protection. To become board certified in child and adolescent psychiatry, doctors must prove they can perform age-appropriate psychiatric interview, among other things, and pass an exam. Maintaining certification requires continuing education and a new exam. The federal government no longer requires psychiatrists who treat children in the Office of Refugee Resettlement Contracted Shelters to be board certified. Skipping ahead on that article, a congressman from Texas, Representative Pete Olson, called Monday for a Shiloh's closure after learning about children being drugged with psychotropic medications here. Olson's statement, provided to Reveal, also referred to reports of serious issues at facilities linked to Shiloh stretching back years, as reported by the Houston Chronicle and other news outlets in the state. And there's much more to that article. That is at Reveal News, revealnews.com. And see that Moises looks rather pensive.
This is horrible, honestly, taking the kids away from their families and then putting them on drugs. Lab rats, the human lab rats, is terrible.
That's what it looks like to me that they are doing, and the reason is because of the history of MKUltra. In the 1950s, this is from D. Gibbs faculty at Arizona.edu. In the 1950s, the CIA set up a secret project called MKUltra to develop techniques for controlling human behavior, with the ultimate aim of creating political assassins. As part of its experiments, thousands of civilians, quote, African-American prostitutes and Canadian psychiatric patients, end quote, were subjected, often unwittingly, to the most extreme exposure to mind-altering drugs. The project's chief psychiatrist treated the author's mother, She was lucky. Many others lost everything, including their lives. She writes, in 1954, my mother was admitted to the Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal, suffering from postnatal depression. She spent 2 months in the hospital, and while there, I came under the care of Ewen Cameron. That's E-W-E-N Cameron, Ewen Cameron. And if you want to look up this information yourself, it helps to know that name, Ewen Cameron, the father of CIA mind control techniques, the techniques that you can now see in photos of how the bizarre treatment of the prisoners at Guantanamo. And we now know that most of the prisoners at Guantanamo Naval Base who were taken from Afghanistan were actually gathered up after a bounty was offered. And desperate people actually kidnapped their own relatives and strangers and brought them and claimed that they were with the Taliban. And some of these people were simply college students or goat herders. And you saw the photographs and the videos of those people walking around with what looked like headphones on their ears. These are actually sound-deadening earmuffs and blinders over their eyes. And extensive clothing in the blazing heat of, I've been to Guantanamo, and I can tell you it is extremely, extremely hot there. And that was sensory deprivation, and this was developed back in the 50s and 60s by Ewen Cameron, E-W-E-N-C-A-M-E-R-O-N, Ewen Cameron, and that is who I thought of when I saw the shocking article on Democracy Now! That there was, and of course, we only know of that one black site, but historically, we know there must be others. And I suspect that one of the reasons that ICE contends that it cannot find or that is somehow accidentally lost the records of so many children is because they are to be turned over for experiments. And I was jokingly saying that there should be a moment of silence for the pain of the billionaires who don't wish to pay living wages. That was a joke, but it is silence that bears down on me now as I bring this information together and as I comment about it. It is very difficult. I just want to say, for any human being, it's very difficult for me to confront the fact that this apparently is happening again, is ongoing, and if the Trump administration can possibly get away with it, they would like to distract your attention with something else. With endless tweets from the tweeter-in-chief, with anything, so that you don't understand how terroristic, how vile, how evil, how inhuman the ICE techniques are. And when I consider all of that, I feel no twinge going to a place that is continually confronting people who a lot of people like to say are just doing their jobs. Across from me, there's this giant facility where people are, quote, just doing their jobs, end quote. But there comes a time when just doing your job is such a vile, inhumane, and degraded thing that it cannot be tolerated. And this is true for everyone who is now participating, the people who are now listening to me on the Stinger, which I can say with great confidence because of simple inductive logic. The Stinger, which is now mounted inside or nearby the ICE building, which is mediating all broadcasts, including this one, through Wi-Fi. All cell phone texts and Wi-Fi and photos are going through the Stinger. This is what the federal cops do. This is what they did in Seattle. This is what they do near the Capitol. Hi, guys. I know you're listening to me. And I think that I know that you are human beings, that you are trying to find. I want to address you directly. I know that you're trying to find a way to live with this. You're trying to listen to all the excuses, to the grotesque exaggerations, for example, that President Trump constantly repeats so that you might believe that there are, you know, millions and millions of people who are criminals, who are coming into the society and degrading, that they are simultaneously degrading the workforce, and yet they're getting Social Security even though they can't have Social Security numbers. They're getting jobs even though they're not allowed to have jobs without documentations. No, of course, people are coming here and they're taking what is available and what is profitable to give them, and what it has been profitable for many, many years. And so it's up to you also, those of you listening to me from the ICE Stinger, Those of you listening on the broadcast who are with the federal government, who are with the Republican Party and with the Trump administration, to acknowledge that what you're doing is evil, to turn from what you're doing, to repent from what you're doing. I don't know of a better word. It's very religious. I was brought up with evangelicals. You should repent from what you are doing, and you must atone for what you are doing. And it is most efficacious for you to do that in a group, and that is starting to happen. There is a group of ICE agents in New York who have confronted and criticized their own employers, ICE and the government, for acting in this horrendous and unacceptable and illegal way. And so if you do it by yourself, if you're smart, you'll do it like Snowden and make preparations for your and your own family's good in advance of taking any motion, in advance of revealing files like Chelsea Manning did. But you're much better off doing it in mass. You're much better off having a vote and doing it as a group and walking out of the facility together. That gesture will allow you to live with yourself the rest of your life. If you do it with a group of people, if you mutiny with a group of people against these illegal and unacceptable policies, these violations of human rights, then not only will your gesture be powerful, but it'll be that much more difficult to prosecute you afterwards. There will be that much less taste for prosecuting you. And it's just generally more difficult when a group of people do it. So I encourage you in the ICE facility right now to take a vote, decide on what you're going to do, what your statement's going to be, why you're doing it, and walk out. Walk out of the facility. Turn from the evil. Turn from cooperating with this ICE attack on your own people. And it literally has been against your own people in an article that I was reading earlier in which U.S. citizens were brought in. How does that happen? You know how it's happened. It's happened because as a group, as a mob, you have turned against people with brown skin. You're acting on racist basis. You can continually deny that. And as a matter of fact, for whiteness to prevail in the United States, it is necessary for that to be continually denied. And that is something that white people get a great deal of practice in doing. But all of you, whether you personally consider yourself white or not, all of you are responsible for what you're doing. You can't be neutral on a moving Titanic, and I say, get off before it sinks. Get off before it sinks. Turn against your commanders. Walk out.
Yes.
You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. The time is 9:49 a.m. Pacific time, and I'm live here at the Occupy camp. And Moises, I wonder if you have any comments, if you're thinking.
I've been thinking a lot this whole time, honestly. It's 3 weeks.
You've been here 3 weeks?
I've been here coming up on 3 weeks, yeah. It's been almost a month of camp, so I got here in the first Friday.
That's quite an experience. So you're not, you look pretty young to me. You were you around during the Occupy?
I was not around the first Occupy. This is actually my first ever.
I want to ask about 1999.
Activism. 1990, actually.
You were in 1999. You were rather small, I imagine.
I was still little wee one. Yeah. Frankly, I think as far as I've seen the camp go and this whole Occupy ICE movement, I see a lot of good hopes in it. The fact that DHS has had, the ICE facility here has had a human rights inspector come in, give them a citation for their fans. The fact that they've been trying to push us to being aggressive and we have been nothing but resilient and peaceful, I think it's gotta be eating at them at this point, and they're gonna do something that's really gonna screw them up.
There are no weapons here. I even worry coming in with my staff, which I bring, you know, whenever my back is sore, I have my wooden staff, and I come in here and I look around and I'm thinking, geez, I hope this isn't taken as a weapon. That's how peaceful it is.
We have the moral ground here.
You do have the moral ground. That's something that is very significant. I really do hope that more people who are with the feds now will turn back. For one thing, I would say at a historic moment like this, there's turning back is the only choice. If you go forward, then if you are with the federal government and you go forward in defending these policies, then there is no moral ground for you. All you have left is taking your orders. And historically, I don't think I need to say specifically what it is, there's an odiousness associated with just taking orders and without being a human being and without thinking about what you're doing. I was talking about the context, the ongoing context, stretching from the 1950s through the wars against Iraq and Afghanistan, and now apparently including this ICE war against our own people. And when I say our own people, I'm thinking America with a little A. Against our own fellow human beings who live here, work here, this horrible separation of children. And now, apparently, due to the presence of black sites, the strong possibility of, and due to the fact that we know of usage of psychotropic drugs already against these children, the strong possibility that these black sites are for psychiatric experimentation on these poor children who have been separated from their parents, who have now become non-persons. We don't know their names. ICE has intentionally lost their information. All we have is citizens who, like the woman who reported this to Reveal News in Arizona, all we have is citizens acting from their best place, acting from their hearts. And this is, I'm in the midst of a camp full of those. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Press Watch and broadcasting live from the Occupy camp. I want to give you some more information on going back to 1957 through 63. Despite the misgivings of many in government and clinical medicine, Ewan Cameron became one of the most funded, published, and renowned psychiatrists in the West. Ewan Cameron, this is the torturer I was referring to, had been a friend of Alan Dulles, the head of the CIA. Ever since Dulles had chosen him to serve as the American psychiatric representative at Nuremberg, how's this for irony, where he was to judge whether Rudolf Hess was fit to stand trial. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. As CIA psychologist John Gittinger pointed out in a deposition made in the 1980s, Canadians were deemed to be of little interest to the American public. In 1977, with the release of documents under the U.S. Freedom of Information Act, Cameron was discovered to have run the most extreme trials in mind control, using massive amounts of shock treatments, drugs like LSD and PCP, and particularly invasive forms of therapy he had devised called depatterning and psychic driving. The Montreal experiments, as they were later to be known, were instituted in 1953. At the start of the Cold War. They are arguably the most extravagant example of the U.S. government's widespread program in human experimentation. Much of it is now only now coming to public attention. The CIA is admitted to supporting behavior control research at 150 institutions, including 44 universities and various hospitals, prisons, and drug companies. And so that shows just how much the sort of behavior spreads. It's really a mob activity, but we don't see it as such. As Americans, and particularly as white people, we get used to doing things that are horrendous because everyone else is doing it. You know, as your mother doubtless said to you at some point in your life, if everyone else was jumping off a bridge, would you do it? Well, I would argue that there'd be a pretty strong impulse to do it. If everyone was wearing a uniform and you read every day in the press that that was the important thing to do, and that you'd be a better person once you did, we're bamboozled into doing this sort of thing. And I want to pose the question openly, and I would say that ICE certainly deserves the accusation, and the CIA most definitely deserves the accusation, of whether children are being psychiatrically tortured with drugs at this black site in Arizona, as revealed yesterday on Democracy Now! And revealed in Reveal News. That information is available online, and I was able to find it simply by running a search on Ewan Cameron, that's E-W-E-N Cameron, C-A-M-E-R-O-N, and on MK Ultra, that's MK and the word Ultra. MK is usually, actually that's usually all caps, and so you can find that information yourself. The Arizona sites, from what we know from Democracy Now!'s reporting yesterday, that ran for a couple or a few weeks, long enough to have done this sort of thing to those children. And so I accuse ICE of torturing children in a way that is scarcely believable. All right, so we've got a couple of minutes left. It's funny to be saying these dark and horrible things and talk about the dungeons that are right next to me. By the way, I want to say once again, there is excessive HVAC equipment on the roof, and that is to go with their deprivation program, in which they deprive you even from body heat. When you're in these dungeons, you are subjected to to exposure, to suffering from exposure by the fact that they keep the temperature too low in the cells, and that's just part of what's going on. So I encourage anyone listening to me to get down to the Occupy ICE PDX camp. And Moises, I want to thank you very much for joining me in the broadcast. Stay tuned, because Chris Andre is coming up next, and I hope this signal goes out to everyone here in Cascadia and to all the ships at sea.